U.S. factory activity slowed amid a fall in new orders.
Based on hitting a shareholder value.
A lot more global, so creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on this Friday afternoon from the Skyline, the Allstate Skyline Studio, I should say. Thanks very much for tuning in. That last voice you heard was Andrea Haines, and she is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Chicago Tribune. She'll be along in just a second. A little bit later in the program, we're going to look at the changing urban markets and the fact that I think probably if you pay attention here, you know that downtown Chicago is growing. A lot of people are moving back into the city, particularly downtown. That was the subject of a study done by a number of groups, including the real estate advisory group RCLCO, and we're going to talk about the changes. People, the city population now is growing at, I think, about the same pace as the suburbs, and that's a big switch from the way it used to be. That's coming up a little bit later. We'll talk about beer and the fear of beer companies that millennials, well, they're just not having a beer when they go out on Saturday nights or so. We start, though, with Andrea from Blue Sky. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, let's stay with beer. You want to do that? Because actually, the first topic and last topic of the program today are similar. Miller Coors started this Two Hats beer. It wasn't even a year ago, was it?
Yeah, it's very new, but it didn't last very long. This is sort of a light beer, kind of light flavors of lime and pineapple.
Right, okay, you've got me there.
Yeah, right. I mean, you either are going to like that or you're not, probably. But this was an effort to kind of interest younger drinkers, obviously legal drinkers, but younger drinkers, people in their early 20s. And it just didn't really work. So Miller Coors, which is based in Chicago, has decided to cancel this. So by early next year, you will not be able to find it anymore if you are one of the people that likes it.
It's kind of hard for me to keep track, but Miller Coors, so their two big brands are Coors Light and Miller Light, right? Those are the two top sellers for that company.
Yes.
And they're not doing so well.
Yeah, so millennials, you know, it's funny because you think of craft beer. Beer seems so popular right now that it seems counterintuitive to be saying that beer is down. But the really big brands are down a little bit on those popular kind of mainstream brands.
The beer shipments, it says here, domestic, are down 3.7% through June compared to last year. So you want to be going up. You don't want to be going down. I mean, 3.7 isn't huge, but it's in the wrong direction.
Exactly. Beer is still a massive industry. Sounds like you're going to talk a little bit more about this, but, you know, millennials really love wine. They love whiskey. They love cocktails.
And who's so, next? Is it Gen Z?
Gen Z will be coming up next. And I think so far, people seem to think that they might be more millennial-like in their taste, but, you know, who can say?
Well, we will bring it up later, but they say Gen Z is more hard alcohol. The handles and things like that.
Yeah, that the spirits will be even more prevalent among them.
And again, I hate to just talk all the first segment about what's coming up in the last segment, but one of the beer companies is moving toward marijuana-infused drinks, too, which leads us to William Wrigley, who we think of Wrigley Gum, but he's involved in medical marijuana.
Yes. So this is William Wrigley, who goes by Bo, who is from Chicago, I think now spending some time in Florida, and has gotten involved in this Atlanta-based company called Sertera Wellness, which is a medical cannabis company.
He gave them $62 million. Was that what it was?
His investment army is a personal investment fund, which led a fundraising round of $65 million.
65,
so some big portion of that was from his investment company. And he first invested last year, but just this week became chairman of the board of directors at this company.
And so it's William Wrigley Jr., and he inherited this great company, you know, so he's kind of born into it and all of that. So given that, I love the quote from him about how he's so excited to be in this startup and really about helping people. I mean, it shows that he's kind of got a fever for it. He wasn't just a guy who inherited a company.
Yeah, he seems to have a passion for this business, which I could imagine that if you are, you know, of that mindset, this is obviously something that could really explode in the coming years as more and more states, you know, many states, I think 30 states now allow it for medical purposes, 9 have legalized for recreational purposes, and that's only expected to grow. So you can see this is a little bit of a gold rush kind of situation.
Well, yeah. He says it can give people a normal life, let them go to school and be a normal member of society. It's incredible to craft that opportunity in an industry that is starting from scratch. Illinois has, they're still in the pilot program for medical marijuana. I think about 40,000 patients here.
And, yeah, Illinois is more on the starting end. We're not quite as there as some of the other states, but there are some opportunities to get it here for medical use too.
Lou Lang, make it happen. I know he's been working on that. Okay, why is it significant, or why should I care about Jack Smith's 2-year birthday in Virginia.
So Jack made the history books because he ordered ice cream and a popsicle via drone and had it successfully delivered.
And it was the first time, right? This is a pilot program with the FAA?
Yes. So the FAA allowed this test. It was in Virginia, and it's over basically like congested areas where you have people living. So it was kind of a new thing there. And, you know, it worked. So it's just kind of one of those moments. And this particular company is an Alphabet company, which you may know from Google. This is the parent company. And this was kind of one of their side projects. And now it is literally taken off.
And so the idea was this was the first time that the FAA allowed a drone to deliver something that went outside the site of the flyer and then went, like you said, over congested areas. What I think is cool is kind of, and I didn't even think of this, but how the drone actually delivered the popsicle.
And still frozen, apparently, right?
Still frozen, so. Yeah. And on a tether, like dropped it down so that there wasn't a concern that Jack's 2-year birthday might have been marred by a black eye if the drone had hit him.
Yes, not randomly throwing stuff through the air, but yes, lowering it, surgical strike of popsicle, so yeah.
And so they're saying that this is going to be the way of the future, right? But they're worried about, they've got to figure out how to monitor that sort of low altitude area. They've got to worry about nefarious uses, too, because wasn't a drone just used in an attack in Venezuela last week?
Yeah, and that is interesting to me. We were just having a little offline conversation about security at venues, and one of the things on Soldier Field's list that you cannot bring in for security purposes are drones, right? More people have them. You can see more and more applications of these that are, you know, when you think of large festivals and large gatherings, especially, right, that are kind of scary. Just safety in general, there's a lot still to figure out here.
You mentioned Soldier Field because it's on your mind, right?
Soldier Field's on my mind. The big Beyonce, Jay-Z concert tonight and tomorrow night.
I got to say, I love what you've done with your purse.
Oh, thank you. So yeah, this was new to me, the clear bag policy. You can have a bag the size of your hand, which isn't much of a bag.
Right.
And if you go any bigger than that, you have to use a clear bag up to 12 by 12 inches.
So you're walking around with a purse that everyone can see everything that's in it.
I do, and I was conscious of that when I packed it. I was pretty careful.
Andrea Haynes. Hey, what's up in Red Eye this week?
So Red Eye has some Midwest escapes. So when you're looking at August, thinking of the end of the summer, pick up a Red Eye, and there's some places you can go in Wisconsin, Michigan, around, you know, other states nearby to get your beer and your food and all those things.
And recreational marijuana if you pick the right state.
That's right.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Here we are on 720 WGN on this Friday afternoon. Tom Gimbel is in the studio. He's the CEO of LaSalle Network, a placement firm. How do you describe it?
Yeah, recruiting and staffing firm.
And, well, he's always a breath of sunshine every time he comes by.
It's overcast today, okay. So what are you saying?
You just make it sunny, my friend.
Thank you.
There's a statistic. 71% of people surveyed recently said, and these are human resources professionals.
Yep.
71% said they valued human intelligence in a potential worker over their IQ.
Yeah, so it's that emotional intelligence of how people perceive themselves, how they perceive others.
Come on. We talked about this before. I didn't think you were a big proponent of emotional intelligence.
Well, no, it's because I'm such a skeptic of people's IQ that I have to default to EQ. I think that as managers, everybody wants to think that they have emotional intelligence.
Okay.
But very few people go, oh, I'm oblivious to how other people are. Everybody thinks that they have it.
They all think that they're tuned in. Right. Or the other thing that I think would be sort of risky is that they'll try to fake it.
Right.
They try to fake emotional intelligence.
It's almost like faking that you care about something.
Yeah. Oh, that's,
well, I mean, the great philosopher Coach Ditka had that quote, if you don't have genuine enthusiasm, fake it.
Right. Oh, Tom, that's a great point. I really think you're really intelligent, and I appreciate that.
And then you walk out, and they have nothing gets moved on.
All right. So if you're interviewing, how do you convey this emotional intelligence without looking like you're faking
it? I think it's more, as a hiring manager, how do you determine if somebody may have it?
Okay.
And I think another way of looking at emotional intelligence is self-perspective, right?
Explain that.
So, Steve, tell me about a time where you inadvertently offended somebody.
Oh my God, I did it this morning.
And the person respected you enough that they told you they were offended by you?
See, these are trick questions to me. I feel defensive now.
What? You honestly?
Yeah, I do. I think if I were getting those questions in an interview, I would feel a little defensive about that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, it's hard, but you have to realize, are you running a radio station? Are you running an accounting department? Are you running a sales team? What do you need? Because in a job where somebody's very task-oriented, come in and do 1, 2, 3, and 4 and go home,
mm-hmm.
emotional intelligence may not
Doesn't
be that
matter
important.
That much, right.
If you're hiring sales or account management or marketing folks or human resources people, then you need people who actually have perspective.
So one of the things, the tips that I saw, which I'm a big fan of, is this active listening.
Yep.
Which I try to engage in. I mean, talking to people, four or five
That's
people every
do,
day.
Right?
Yeah. You have to, you know, I think there's a risk sometimes of, for me, focusing on the next question rather than the answer that's coming. And I suppose if you're being interviewed, the risk is focusing on your answer before you actually listen and hear the question.
Well, it's, you know, the joking phrase is, so how are you doing today? So what's up, right?
Right, right.
And the right, you know, my grandfather used to always say the sky.
Right, right, right.
And other people go, what's up? And not much. You know, and I always say to people who work for me or with me, what's up? Not much. Nothing? I mean, you're working here. There's nothing going on. We have these auto reflexes to questions, and we're not really thinking about what do they want to know? What do they want to ask? Is it a polite salutation? And too often people are thinking, what I want to say is what's important.
Well, right. And I think then if you're not, and I think if you're the questioner, you react well when you find that someone's really engaged in your question,
correct.
Right? Not trying to come up with the pat answer, but listening to it and maybe tuning off.
Well, and in an interviewee conversation, it's the follow-up question, right? So two people, okay, what's your biggest obstacle, your biggest weakness, your biggest strength? People want to go through the check boxes, right?
I care too much, Tom.
Right. That's the worst ant, right? Terrible. And then someone says, tell me about a time that your career was hurt because you cared too much. And they'll say, I stayed up for 3 days in a row to finish this project. And I would say, that sounds to me like your career benefited from it.
What is a good, it's a good answer to your greatest flaw?
A genuine, real answer. I'm not detail oriented, so I have to spend more time trying to make sure that that does that, and it takes it away from where my strengths are. And I wish I could focus more on my strengths, and I'd probably do better.
Right.
But I worked for a boss who focused on my weaknesses.
And is there any danger in revealing your weaknesses?
No. The question is this: are they going to find? Is your employer going to find out your weaknesses if you get the job?
Probably.
So why not close that door before it's open?
And the other thing then is that in this job market, you can almost maybe interview the interviewer about culture and things like that, right? To see if you're a good fit as well.
Yeah. The hard part is sometimes people, they don't do any research. They don't think about what they want out of a career or a job, and they'll just ask a question for the sake of asking it. Like, you should really say to somebody, if you're the interviewee, you should say, Steve, can you tell me about the track record of people who've taken this job and where their careers have gone?
Right, right. Because that shows you're interested and involved.
I want to know where my career's going to go if I take this job.
Tom Gimbel shows today and every day really great emotional intelligence, and I'm
Thank
glad
you.
He was here to do it.
Well, next Friday I won't be because I'm going to be crying because my son's going to
college. I wasn't going to bring it up, but so yeah, next Friday you won't be here. You're taking your oldest to college.
Yep.
And I just see I can see it in your face.
Oh, you know what? It's one of those things, though. You and I have talked about this. If you've done your job well as a parent, they want to go away.
You want it to happen. It'll be great. It'll be great.
You know what? I'm excited for him, which is the most important thing.
Tom Gimbel. We'll get a full recap in a couple of weeks. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. All right, craft beers are everywhere, right? There's a craft brewery on just about every corner of every American city these days. So why is big beer losing customers? Well, I guess they're the threat of craft beers, of course, but beers in general are losing favor when it comes to millennials and then the Gen Z afterward. We will pursue that a little bit later in the program when we're joined by Kate Taylor. She writes about retail for Business Insider. Right now, let's go back to those American cities and talk to, on the phone line, Adam Ducker, who's the managing director at the RCLCO Real Estate Advisors. That group, along with the Urban Land Institute, is behind a study of American cities and urban areas, I guess I should say, in general, and where they're headed. Adam, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Pleasure to be with you.
All right, so this is one of those where you're going to have to talk slowly to me because sometimes numbers are hard for me to grasp. But
fair enough.
So it used to always be, right, that the suburbs were growing much bigger or much more quickly than downtown urban areas. And the big finding of this study, as I see it, or one of them anyway, is that at least at this moment, that's no longer true.
That's exactly right. It's even more dramatic than that. Really, since the 1960s, most cities in the United States, even Chicago, which, you know, came closest to bucking the trend, were declining in population. Just since the last recession, that tide has turned, both nationally and in Chicagoland, where now we have growth both in urban places and in suburban places,
I'm sorry, it's a good point, though. Right, it's not that the suburbs are growing less quickly, but they're still growing, right? They're growing at about the same speed. So does that mean people are moving out of the country and coming to urban areas altogether?
That's correct. So we're seeing more growth in, you know, urbanized metropolitan areas. But, you know, the headline is interesting, right? Urban areas recendent, but overstated to characterize suburbs as kind of entirely dead or no longer attractive.
Well, you know, we see it here all the time. Mayor Emanuel is talking about bringing businesses that were at one point as Chicago businesses that moved to the suburbs, whether it's in the 60s or 70s or 80s or whenever, they tend to be coming back to downtown. And one of the things you hear about often is that that's because these businesses want to attract younger workers, millennial workers. So are we to extrapolate from that it's young people who are moving into the city? Because I know a lot of retirees or older workers who are coming into the city as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Before we get to the younger workers, that we were talking earlier about population, the trend with employment is even more dramatic. Even in Chicago, up till, you know, very recently, the vast majority of jobs are actually located in the suburbs.
Right.
And the tide turning, if you will, has been even more dramatic in terms of employment. And yes, very much so. Oriented towards where is the workforce that...
Did I see that 36% of job growth in the country comes from urban areas? Is that the statistic?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, despite the fact that it's actually a much smaller share of that today.
So what changed? Because those companies that were in the suburbs were still hiring people 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Younger people were, if they wanted to live in the city, were commuting out or they were living in the suburbs. What is it that's changed that's bringing those businesses now into the city center or near the city center?
Well, it is the young people, and it's particularly the subset of highly trained, you know, science, technology, finance, professional services, that cohort that is more likely today to live in the cities. By the way, it's also that, you know, corporations and kind of creative economy companies in particular have really kind of looked at the city not just as a place where their workforce is, but it has the energy, the dynamism, people meet each other, you know, ideas kind of bang into each other, that the urban context itself has kind of proven to be a better setting to run a successful company. It's not universally true, but people are coming to that conclusion.
All right, and so tell me about the economics of living in the city versus the suburbs. It's more affordable to live in the city,
well,
but the houses are more expensive in the suburbs?
That's the historical you know, pattern that we've observed for many times. It's now flipped in many cases, and it's starting to flip in Chicago, too.
Explain that for me.
You know, it's hard to say it apples to apples, but it is effectively more expensive to live in the city today than the suburbs.
And traditionally, the city population has needed more affordable housing, so they're missing out on that?
They are missing out, and the affordable housing challenges in cities are becoming more pressing than ever, right? A greater need and a more imbalance between demand and supply for affordable housing.
Okay, so finish your thought. I'm sorry, Adam, go ahead.
No, and I'm saying in some ways the suburbs are actually functioning more and more as an affordable alternative for people that are priced out of urban neighborhoods.
Wow. That's fascinating. So, all right, the study is done. Who reads this and what do they do with it? I mean, how is this going to be used to shape the future?
Well, the Urban Land Institute and our firm are a community of practitioners. So this is really to help people that are providing housing, building offices, thinking about policy and maybe investment strategy to, you know, really have some facts about where people are going and why. It's a very dynamic picture. And so the hope and expectation is that people kind of use this to make decisions about, you know, where there is opportunity.
And, you know, we talked earlier this week, it was yesterday, in fact, I think, on the show about an opportunity for investment might be in affordable apartments and not the high-end apartments that are being built in Chicago, but maybe more for middle-class apartments. That might be a real growth area.
That's exactly right. And another idea, we're very interested in what we call, you know, the stable middle income neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. This is a particularly big share of Chicago. According to our analysis, almost half of the urban land is what we call stable middle income urban neighborhoods. These are areas that used to see lots of housing development, and they've been almost entirely overlooked in this real estate cycle. We think it's a tremendous opportunity.
Adam Duckers, the managing director at RCLCO Real Estate Advisors. Adam, it was great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
A pleasure. Have a nice weekend.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hope you said goodbye to the old rock and roll McDonald's in River North, because the new one is here. The latest Mickey D's is one of the most up-to-date fast food restaurants in the country, with online order pickup spots, automated kiosks, and somehow more people in the workforce than before? Well, CEO Steve Easterbrook says it's all about repurposing labor. For example, let's take one of the cashiers that used to man the register. They can now run the food that you ordered on the kiosk to your table. Just think, this could be setting the trend for fast food restaurants around the globe. Trendsetters right here in our backyard. No biggie. What is a biggie, though, was news yesterday about the Tribune Sinclair deal withdrawal. Okay, so the latest is that Tribune Media, our parent company, is backing out of the proposed $3.9 billion buyout from the East Coast-based Sinclair. Tribune said that Sinclair breached agreements in some of the contracts, so they decided they couldn't move forward. Back to business as usual for all of us here at Tribune Media. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, our number of the week this week, well, it doesn't have to do so much with money or businesses, but I couldn't resist. The number of the week is 429. Michael Graychick worked as an Associated Press reporter, and as part of his duties in Texas, he had to cover executions. He witnessed 429 executions while writing, which is far more than any other American has seen. He retired last month, but he plans to continue covering executions as a freelancer. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. John Williams not too far away as we get set for his Friday afternoon program, and maybe you'll have a beer at happy hour as you listen to John, or maybe not. On a phone line this afternoon is Kate Taylor. She writes about retail for the Business Insider and wrote recently about the fact that big beer is a little bit worried about the young people. Kate, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you for having me on.
You know, we've been talking for a long time about the fact that the threat to big beer were the small beers, were craft beers. And we saw a number of local breweries, Goose Island is one here in Chicago, purchased by the big beer companies as they tried to branch out. But now it looks like the threat is more than just craft beers, right? Can you explain that for me?
Definitely. So at first, craft beer was kind of causing some issues because younger drinkers did like the independent brands. But now big beer is saying, don't worry about craft beer. We're worried about wine and spirits. Basically, younger drinkers, and especially women, are just gravitating more towards wine, more towards liquor than they are towards beer. And that is kind of causing some huge issues for the biggest beer companies right now.
There was a study done of drinking in 2017, according to the Beer Institute. You wrote about it, saying that in 2017, beer was picked 49.7% of the time when it comes to beverages, which sounds pretty big until you consider that in the mid-90s, it was chosen more than 60% of the time. So a full 10% drop-off there.
Yeah, so for younger drinkers, that's less than half the time when someone's saying, oh, do you want to grab a drink? They're going to actually reach for a beer, is a little bit worrisome.
I think as a youngster, young drinker, beer was attractive because it was the most affordable. Is that no longer the case? I mean, are they finding that wine and cheap liquor can compete with the price of a beer?
It's price is part of it, but people are also a little bit more willing to invest in small luxuries now, where they're looking at the price point, but they're like, well, I'll spend $2 extra here, not because I have a ton of money, but because I can feel a little bit fancy by spending a little more on some wine, even though I don't have enough money to buy a car or buy a house.
Yeah, they can do that, and they don't realize that in my generation, splurging on a good beer was a Heineken. Oh, times have changed greatly. So then let's go to the next generation, Gen Z. If millennials are going to be drinking what? Wine, they think. Gen Z is going to be, they already know they're going to be drinking more hard liquor?
They're drinking more liquor, but also they're just drinking less in general, especially with the legalization of marijuana. Beer companies are starting to be like, huh, these people aren't even drinking underage the way that older generations would. So that's creating kind of some weird problems for them as well.
Well, I don't think they're going to cop to the fact they're talking about underage drinkers in the boardroom, but I'm sure they probably are.
Yes.
But you mentioned marijuana.
Yeah, they're able to look in Europe and kind of get some stats from Europe, so they don't have to admit that they're trying to get 18-year-olds to drink beer.
But you mentioned marijuana, and a couple of the big beer companies now are branching out, are off into marijuana?
Yes, yeah. Heineken, I believe it is now kind of testing this alcohol-free beer that basically has marijuana in it. It tastes like beer, but there's no alcohol in it. There is just marijuana. So it's intended to kind of have the same effect as eating an edible would.
And
but
it
imitates beer and how it looks.
Kate, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but where is that legal? Is that legal in the United States?
That's legal in California.
Okay.
So as more states consider legalizing marijuana, California is going to be a huge area of development for that.
I also see that Corona parent Constellation Brands is buying a stake in a Canadian marijuana producer. So they're looking at it as well.
Yes, yeah. As the Gen Z, they're drinking less beer, but they are smoking more weed. So the big beer companies definitely want to tap into that.
So soon you will be able to pop a bottle and get high.
Yes, exactly.
Kate Taylor is a reporter at Business Insider. She writes about retail, and, well, she's got her happy hour planned today, I can tell. Thank you very much for joining us.